Yud Dalet Elul, Tuesday the 13th of September, Rabbi Svi Wanderer, Tefillas Kelim, Part 2.
Continuing with some halachos of Tefillas Kelim, I believe last time we covered such things as kelim which are used by restaurants and in business, and today I wanted to speak a little bit about the method of tevila and how it's fulfilled. But before we get on to that, one point about disposable items. Disposable items, the general minhag is not to tevil aluminium foil dishes and the like, even though they are made from metal. And the understanding behind that is, I think, reasonably straightforward, that disposable things haven't got a shame keli. A keli is something which has a permanence to it, degree of permanence, and therefore something is a temporary keli. It's used once, here today and gone tomorrow, then it doesn't require tevila. Probably worth noting that we're moving into an age where more and more things are becoming disposable, and the grade or quality of disposable things is also increasing. So much so, I recently saw some metal cutlery, picked it up, and I was about to tap a glass with it, and it was a piece of, it was made out of plastic, it looked so good, it was imitation, it would be next to imitation food as well, I've got to watch out for that. But at the moment we're really increasing the level of quality to the point where it's arguably, things are getting nearer and nearer to what's called, being called a keli. Conversely, somebody recently told me that they went to a function, it was a non-Jewish, non-Kosher restaurant, they were provided with a kosher meal, and the meal was plattered on proper solid china plates, and the restaurant threw them away afterwards. So it's not worth the while of the supplier or the restaurant to retain these things. So how do we define disposable? And I think it's reasonable to say that we follow the what the opinion of the Rov is that even if you'll find some people who may drink their vodka and throw the glass into the fire, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that a glass is disposable. It just means that person is disposing of a good quality item. Now, such a thing would require tevila, I think generally speaking, we determine the status of disposable by how most people use these items. Rav Moshe Feinstein discusses reusing disposable things. So you have a foil dish which is in pretty good state after the first time, you use it again. So I believe he said that two or three times is okay. If a person uses it for more than that, then it could be a din of achshavei, that we have the principle that a person can himself, he can accredit an item with greater status than it normally has, and therefore if it's used multiple times, then it could be that it is a problem. I believe Falk from Gateshead said that a coffee jar which is used again does not need to be retobled. That could be for a number of reasons, particularly because storage items, as we mentioned last time, storage kelim are not actually chayv with tefillah, certainly not with a bracha. A person has a sugar or coffee jar, and it's used again and again, so it might require tevila, but not necessarily with a bracha. So Roy Falk says if you use a Nescafe jar again for more coffee, then it doesn't require tevila, even if you use it multiple times. That is one particular exception. Generally speaking, things which reuse should be tevila. Sorry? So then it could be that it's achshave, it could be that it's turned into something more. I mean, somebody mentioned to me that they know someone who uses pickle tins, aluminium tins for cooking on, because they're from a time when these things were a rarity, and therefore they considered that to be something important. So it could be that such a thing, if a person uses it themselves in a normal course of affairs, it could be it is chayav tevila. But certainly disposable that are used once or twice, even three times, are fine, does not require tevila. Now moving on to the method of tevila, how tevila is done, because there's an important point which is probably apparent to most of us, but the important point is that when we table an individual item, the whole item has to be inside the water in one go. So firstly, we have to contrast that to hagola. Hagola meaning when a person kushes an item with fire or with boiling hot water after it became trace. So hagola can be done in parts and sections. A person has a fork and he needs to heat the fork in boiling water. You can dip in first the handle, then you switch it over and dip in the prongs, and that's perfectly acceptable. Whereas with tefillah's kelim, the tefillah has to be done, and the entire item has to be in the water in one go, the difference between Hagola and Tevila being that Hagola is there to physically extract, to remove the bleas that are found inside the item, and therefore it's not significant whether you do all of it or part of it, as long as you've finally completed the whole thing. Whereas Tevila is an element of Kedusha that's being added, and just like when a lady goes to the mikvah, whole body has to be immersed in one go, so too with the keli. That has ramifications regarding handles of kelim, something which is people have told me they've seen people dip in a knife with a plastic handle and a metal blade, and they've dipped in the blade and not the handle, and they say, well, the blade is made out of plastic. Plastic does not require tevila. That's an erroneous statement, because although correct, the plastic does not require tevila in of itself, but being a yad for a keli, since it's the handle of the keli, therefore, if you fail to tovel the handle, you haven't tovelled the whole keli, and this is if you've only tovelled it lechatzon, only partly tovelled. And therefore, all handles need to be tovelled, even if they are made from an item or from a material that itself does not require tevila. And there are many items nowadays that are dual material. So it's made partly from wood and partly from metal, partly from plastic and partly from metal. So how do we determine if an item requires tevila if it's made half-half? So the determining factor is which part touches the food. So with a knife, it's readily apparent, it's straightforward that the blade touches the food, and it's intuitive as well, therefore you have to tovel it, even though the handle doesn't, you have to tovel the whole thing. Other items that are, actually the other way around, if one thinks of a bottle stop, some people have very nice decorated silver bottle stops for their Kiddush on Shabbos, and the cork goes in the bottle and the metal sticks out, so that does not require tevila, because the part that it touches the food is a part that is not made out of wood, cork, not metal or glass. Doesn't require, such a thing would not require tevila. And generally speaking, we follow you view the part which touches the food. A tin opener, whether it's made from plastic, metal, or a combination of both, does not require tevila, because a tin opener is not something which services the food. You need to cook upon it, nor do you eat from it, and therefore that's one example of an item which doesn't require tevila in of itself, irrespective of what it's made from.
But the knife with a plastic handle needs tevila there. You've got it in the metal touching the food.
Right, so you always follow the part. If the part which touches the food is either metal or glass, then that's going to be mechayev tevila. You always.
You said it's part of the whole item, or is it because it's a plastic which is sorted in the handle?
So the plastic requires tevila, not because it touches food or not, because there are two stages. In other words, you have to first determine which part touches the food. So in the case of the bottle stop, it's the wooden part, the cork, and therefore there's no chiv tevila full stop. But once you've established that a metal part touches the food, then you have to reassess the keli and say, does this have a yard, an item which helps it work? And if it, then you have to serve the whole thing. That's not regarding the material, but regarding tevila in completion rather than chatzon. So now, this point about tovelling the whole item then leads us on to something which is much more relevant to us on an everyday basis, because when a person takes hold of a specific item, whatever it is, and you put it in the water, so unless you're happy to throw it in and then retrieve it afterwards, which probably most times you wouldn't want to do, so whenever you hold on to it and you tovel it, one has to, we all know how we do it, and we know what we do, but we need to think, just analyse how exactly it works when you hold on to an item and you're putting it into the water while touching it, because surely the place where you're touching it is not being tovelled properly. So I think it's worth us seeing or listening to the words of the Shulchan Aruch inside. In Yerodea Simon Kuf Ches says the Shulchan Aruch the following: Sarach Shiehe Hakeli Rofui Biyodo, that the vessel should be held loosely in one's hand, Bishas Tevilah, at the time of tevila, she'im mahavtkoi, because if a person holds it tightly biyodoi, havi chatzitza, then it's a chatzitza, and you haven't tovelled the whole thing properly. Adds a Shulchan Aruch, a suggestion, v'im lichlech yodoi b'mayim techila ein lochesh. If the person first wetted his hand, made his hand moist with water to begin with, then ein lochesh doesn't matter if he holds it tightly. That's what the Shulchan Aruch seems to be saying. So, obviously, taking stage by stage, when it's held loosely, when you hold a, if they take hold of a cup with a handle, it just link your fingers around the handle and you shake it around. Obviously, gravity will ensure that the the water will suspend the item in your hand, and obviously that's fine. That's called a loose tevila, and that's perfectly acceptable. But the next stage of the Shulchan Aruch is needs to be understood, because the Shulchan Aruch says that if your hands are wet, then it's not a problem, even if it's not not loose. So the Taz, commenting on that, says that there are really three levels. There's Rofui, there's Beinani, and there's Bedoichi, there's tightly. So Rofui, he says, always. He says Bedoichi could be a problem, but Beinani, he says, when you hold something, you're holding something not especially loosely, but not particularly tight. He said, that's fine if you make your hands wet first. And he explains. He says, because if your hands are wet and you're not pressing tightly on the keli, then the interface between your hands and the keli is not going to be totally closed. And he says, then if you take water, even from outside the mikveh, then the water, when it gets inside the mikveh with hashoka, the idea of hashoka is that the mayim shuvim water, which is not kosher as part of a mikveh, is then linked together. So here it's only on a microscopic level, a small amount of water. There's hashoka which is created between the water that came in on your fingers and the rest of the mikveh, and therefore the loose, or should we say the not tight holding of the keli is okay, and it's going to creates a mixing together of all the water on your hand and mikveh, and that's acceptable. The next stage is definitely more challenging, because the Ramah adds on to that. The Ramah says that when we say wet fingers deal with a problem, says the Ramah, "V'dafke shelichlech yodav b'mei mikveh, avaloi b'mayim tlushim." It only works when your hands are wet with mei mikveh, with mikveh water. But if your hands are wet with water, which tulushim, tap water, then it's not acceptable. So that's what the Ramah said, that if you want to hold it tightly, you've got to make sure you're using mikveh water. And all the Achronim jump on the Ramah, and they say, well, what's that supposed to mean? You say, mikveh water, it's not holy water. It's holy water when it's in the mikveh, right? But when you take it out, if you dip your hand in the mikveh and you take it out, so that water could be from the tap or from Evian. It's nothing to do with the mikveh anymore. So what does the Ramah mean when he said that if you use main mikveh, then it's okay? So of all the various mefarshim, the probably the easiest to assimilate in our minds, understand, is the Mata Yonason on the page. Mata Yonason explains the following. This is what he says. He says, when the Ramah says we can use water from the mikveh to make your hand wet, it doesn't mean you put your hand and you take it out, then you grab the cup and you put it in. He says, it means you put your hand in the mikveh and you leave it there. It says, under the surface, your hand is in the water, then you take the keli in your other hands, and you put the keli into your hand in the mikveh. And he says, then the mikveh water is genuine mikveh water, it's staying in the mikveh. And it's premised on it's actually a Mishnah in mikvois regarding tevilas kelim. Of course, nowadays we're talking about tevilas kelim for the purposes of buying a new item, but of course, it was, and it will be, that all the various things, if a Zov sits on a chair or a bed, so you have to take the bed to the mikveh, you have like industrial sized mikvahs to table the bed. So the Mishnah says if you take a bed, a heavy item, and you put it in a mikveh, so even if the words are the legs are shakois petit, even if the legs of the bed are set inside the dirt and the cement, not hard cement, sludge, at the bottom, even though the legs of the bed are clearly embedded in the bottom, in the mud of the bottom of the mikveh, also tefillah is a good tefillah, it's effective. And the Mefarshim explain, because of the principle of Maim Mekadmin, that the water which is there preceded the legs of the bed. So even though it's a big, heavy, 15 kilo bed, and it's sitting at the bottom of the mikveh, and its legs are definitely hard into the ground at the bottom, nevertheless, the water preceded the legs, i.e., the legs fell into the water. And therefore, says the Masa Yonason, it's the same thing when you put your hand into the mikveh, and then you put the keli into your hand. So he said that however tightly you hold it, it doesn't matter. You can hold it as tight as you like, because the water on your hand was there before, in the mikveh, was there before the keli came into your hand. And I think the scientifically minded ones would have trouble understanding on a physical plain, because you could arguably say that if you hold it as incredibly tightly, that it could be that there's no water between your fingers and hand. I don't really want to go into the discussion of surface tension and whatever it might be, your finger and your fingerprints, if there's any indent in your fingers where the water can go. I don't think it's really the point. I believe the point is a conceptual one, that the idea is that you have to have the whole keli, the whole item, all the item, nothing but the item, inside the mikvah. You have to have the whole item inside the mikvah. And the principle of Maimed Kadmim, I would understand it, is that the keli is inside the mikvah, and it's surrounded on all sides by water, and even though you might say that it's pressed very hard against something, the fact is that it's entirely in the mikvah. There's no barrier between it and the mikvah. The only barrier you're worried about is something which was there after the water came, and therefore I understand it more on a conceptual level, that what in this situation, there's no part of the keli that's not in the mikvah, and therefore it's considered to be fully surrounded by mikvah water, and therefore it's effective, and therefore practically speaking, to summarise this, that's quite important, like when we table something, if you hold it loosely, it's fine anyway. If you hold it with a minimum degree of tightness, then if your hands are wet, even from water you took out of the mikvah, then it's also okay. And if you want to hold it really tight, it's your favourite ming vase, and you want to be particularly careful with it, and you want to hold it very tightly, then the trick would be to put it into one's hand, which is already submerged in the mikvah, and then it works on all counts. Those who use a net, which is commonly done when you have a large set of cutlery, so that is acceptable to do so. The only thing is, one should really shake around the net so that the cutlery gets... And the logic being the same thing, that if you have 10 knives and they're relatively heavy, and they're pressing down on each other, so then if you have Maim Kadmim, i.e. the water preceded it, which you can facilitate even when it's already in, you just shake it around, then you can get around all problems. Whereas if you didn't shake it about, then it could be that the weight of one item upon the other prevented the water getting in between them. So that is regarding the method of Tevilah. Now, there's an issue about Tevilah on Shabbos. We know, we say in Bama Madlikim, that Ema Tevilah Mesa Kelim. One of the things you can't do on Shabbos is to Tevilah Keli. The reason, that various reasons given in the Gemara, the reason we primarily say it is because it's Tikkun Mona. Person, Makom Patish is not allowed on Shabbos, and so when you Tevilah Keli, so you're now effectively making it ready. It wasn't usable beforehand. And therefore, it's Tikkun Mona, and you're completing the keli, and therefore you can't do it on Shabbos. So, I met various people recently who told me they have a mikveh in their own home. There is methods for doing that, and it's the latest thing, by the way, before billiards rooms and swimming pools, have your own mikveh. And so that's it's relevant to somebody who has a mikveh in their own house on Shabbos, to know whether you can table something on Shabbos. And for all of us, for us common folk, we haven't got a built-in mikvahs, but on Yom Tov it's the same principle. Yom Tov you also can't tovel a keli because tikkun mona, and we can carry a keli, so you might want to know if you are able to use your, your wife wants to use this nice new dish that was given, and the guest who gave it is actually coming on Yom Tov, so it'd be nice to tovel it, and can you do so on Yom Tov? So the answer is that one can't tovel something on Yom Tov. If you want to use it before you tovel it, there is an etza, you can give it to a goy, and then borrow it back. And if that's allowed, not normally allowed, but for Yom Tov, you're allowed to give something of matana to a goy, and tell him that you want to take it back from him to use it on Shabbos or Yom Tov. That's something which you can do. It only works till after Yom Tov, then you have to tovel it. So in other words, we give this discrepancy, dispensation, for Yom Tov only, and Shabbos. Same rule actually applies. The person's on holiday, there's no mikveh around. Again, we said until you come across a place where there is a mikvah, you're allowed to give it to a goy and borrow it back from him. Other eitzes are to do the tevilah in a way that's not apparent that you're doing it for the sake of tevilah. So one thing one could do is to fill up water from the mikvah. You want to use water for something, if you fill up water from the mikvah, and then it happens to be, oh, by the way, it's been tovel, so that's fine. It's not. Also, a person can wash the keli in a mikvah. A person can wash the keli in a mikvah, and if it's if it needed a bit of washing, then you put it in the mikvah and you wash it up and you clean it, and that's, again, it's not apparent that you're doing it. The third situation is a person can walk into the mikvah holding it. Oh, very good, very good. Sure, thank you for mentioning it. So, very good point. So, any of these eitzes, either to tovel it while washing it, or tovel it while filling it up with water, you can't make a bracha, and the logic being, because the whole idea of these ideas, these aces, is to do the tevila in a way that is not apparent. It's for tevila. You're just sort of, you're doing something else, and agav, on the side, you're creating a situation of tevila. But obviously, if you make a bracha, then it's blatantly obviously doing it. So then one would say, l'choira, that you shouldn't you do it unless you need to do it for yontif, because otherwise you're losing the bracha, which you don't need to do. The third possibility is to go into the mikvah, and you can hold the keli. So you can walk in, passing ketuvah themselves, and when they go to the mikvah themselves, as people are wont to do on Yom Tov morning, Shabbos morning, then they can hold the keli and tovel it, and that is also effective. In that line of thought, it's worth talking about that independently for a second. So if you want to take a keli to a mikvah and go in with it, so I'm not sure, you might have to pay twice the fee. When you do it, I'm not sure what the rules about the monetary arrangements are, but when you take a keli in to the mikvah, quite hard to hide it. When you go in with a keli to a mikvah, forget about Shabbos, the Yom Tov, but just talk about on a weekday when it could pertain to anybody. So a few rules to bear in mind. So firstly, the primary thing which has to be thought about is whether this mikvah would be a kosher mikvah for tefillas noshim, not for anoshim. Because often the leniencies that we put into play for a mikvah which is used for you by men, mine should have been sometimes acceptable way things are done. But certainly one has to establish whether the mikvah is actually kosher for tefillas noshim, which is a higher threshold than for men. Now, that's obviously beyond the discussion today. So that's one thing one has to bear in mind about the mikvah. And the second point is about the bracha, because there's a principle that you can't aim a barakah in a merakot, you can't make a barakah in a bathhouse. It's to do with the zoham, or there's unpleasant steam and odours that come from the fact people are sweating in it, and it's hot in it, etc. So a person can't make a barakah in a bathhouse. Whether the mikvah water is a bathhouse is arguable, but almost usually there'll be showers nearby, whether they're working or not. It's another thing, but there's usually showers nearby, and those would give it the rules of America, according to most opinions, and therefore making the bracha will be a problem. Person can say you can make a bracha outside. You can make a bracha outside and then quickly nip in and tovel the item. And apparently it's not called a hefsek because you're all involved in the same job. Others say if there's no showers and just a mikvah bar, then it could be it has a din of a separate reshus, because since the mikvah has a certain specific size, it attains its own reshus, and therefore a person could make a bracha in the mikvah. I'm all familiar with the idea that a person standing in a mikvah up to their neck, then it ain't liba reza erevah, just like a lady makes a bracha when she's in a mikvah, even though she's not clothed, so too when a person goes in a mikvah, the barrier between the water itself is called the barrier, and therefore a person could in principle make a bracha while standing in mikvah on the keli. But it's obviously complicated, but a situation might arise. The person has to check that it's kosher for noshim, and secondly that it's also has to make the bracha, and please don't ever use it for glass items. I've been to mikvah where somebody decided to throw glass things and broke one of them, and that wasn't so pleasant for everybody else. So that's more practical offers. Now on to the last part about who can do tevila. So the general principle is that a koton cannot do tevila. So it's really worth noting, because a person might send their 11-year-old son with, well, you wouldn't trust him with your finest china. You give him a saucepan and say, go and tovel this for me. And, what can go wrong? You live around the corner, just open the trunk in. What's the problem? So the halacha is that you can't do that. Not because the koton, it's worth noting, it's not because the koton is not able to do tevila. It's to do with ne'emonus. He's not able to give edus. Just like anything you have, when your wife serves you supper, so it may not look like it, but when your wife serves supper to you, and you want to know, are there any insects, is any milk mixed with the meats, etc., so your wife is effectively giving you edus that you have, that your supper is kosher, right? And when your wife presents supper to you, she's being made that supper is kosher. She may not actively say so, it's understood, but maybe say, one person is trustworthy, but so it comes to tovelling something. So how do you know it's been tovelled? So
you have to say a week after the mitzvah
that you did. Oh, very good, very super. So, we'll get that in a second. So the first one is that Kossin is not Nehemon to testify that he tabled something.
If the father supervises
him, it's fine. He can actually make a bracha himself, and arguably it's a good chinuch practice as well, because, like we're saying, it's not a problem of the child.
Sorry?
the child eating, yeah, the child can do it, yeah. And so that was, it's not a problem of the child per se doing it, just that the child is not trusted when he tells you that he's done so. And then that leads on to something which Mr. Rosenberg mentioned, that what happens if the child is now bar mitzvah now, and he then tells you that he actually did you a big favour, because you know you've got a big pile of saucepans in the front room, and he's sitting there, and you keep him saying, I've got to tell you what he's doing, I've really got to tell you. You know what, Daddy, I did you a favour, I told him all for you already. So the halacha is that if he ain't a neman, he's not a neman, but gablusay, masha, osba, it's also could be very relevant to somebody who is someone about teshuva, who knows that their parents kept somewhat of kosher, not sure. And then they inherit this beautiful 24-piece stunning dining set. And they're sure that it's kosher, they're sure, but they don't know about Tzvilas Kelim. Then they have some vague recollection of a little child, a father, going to some place with the water and something called a mikvah. They can't remember exactly. So, but they're pretty certain that their father tabled things. So then it's a problem, because they were accustomed to Shas when they saw it happening. They saw it when they were a child. And then they wouldn't necessarily be Naaman to say that they tabled it. It was tabled, obviously a child should be asked. Now, regarding who can do Tzvila, incidentally, I should point out that with zechuchit, with glass, which also means crockery, because crockery has a din of glass. It's cheras coated in glass. That's why it's shiny. So actually, I'll just take back what I said a little bit, because we actually say that at least with the eved, with glass, a child is neman. So glassware or crockery, a child who says I table something is believed. And also then, in our scenarios where the child says that he thinks that his parents tabled the whole 24-piece set, I'll take that back, not correct what I said, because it's only chayav tefila mitzrabonon, therefore it could be the child is neman on that, to give edus about that, if it's dealing with glass or coated earthenware, i.e. crockery. Now, the next thing is who can do tefila. A shopkeeper, if you go and buy from a shop and they've got a mikvah over there, a person might just order something on the phone and say, please, could you deliver it to me? And you say, yeah, sure, I'll deliver it to you and I'll table it as well. So it's important the shopkeeper can do tefila. He can do it, provided that you first bought it. In other words, if you own it, he can do tefila. If he owns it, then for him, we mentioned last time, can't go to now, kleis choyres, it's a business item rather than an eating item. Therefore, if he owns it, then he can't do tefila. One has to discuss the halachic nuances of credit card purchases, and as to whether actually you do own it, because that's itself a discussion of when you buy something without having physically done mashicha, if it's yours, but that's something to be discussed. And finally, there was one situation where I table something which for somebody else, and they didn't even know about it. There was a couple of tea and coffee containers in a certain shul, which clearly from the fact they had labels all over them, clearly no one had tabled them, and they'd been there for weeks and months. I thought, fine, I'm going to table it, no one's going to get that. And as I tabled it. Now, in that situation, because of Zoychen Odenwein, exactly, because it's a chiyah, you can do the mitzvah for them. If you know that they'd be happy for you to do it for them, then you can make a bracha as well, because then they're your shliach, effectively. And I suppose one could argue to say, if you have non-orthodox relatives and you want to do a massive favour, so you could maybe blindfold them and take all their stuff and table it for them, but I suppose that one would have to discuss the allowances in that situation. But certainly you can table something on somebody else's behalf, unless you know that they want to do it themselves. If they want to do it themselves, then it could be a problem of taking it away from them, sorry, to them, etc. So there's a few more of the halachas, again, a lot more to discuss, but that's the second stage of the halachas of Tzvilas Kelim in the morning.